the greatest MMA journalist in the history of mixed martial arts. I think he's like the 12-time MMA Journalist of the Year winner or something like that. MMAfighting.com's Ariel Helwani. Ariel, it's Dave and Katie. How are you?
Guys, I'm doing great. I'm so happy you finally, I've been asking you for weeks to come back on. You keep telling me you're so busy, so I'm happy you squeezed me in this morning.
I forgot to add in his introduction. Also, one of the world's preeminent biggest Expos fans. A lot of people
that is true.
Huge
that
Expos.
That is true. I can't wait to talk about Scott Perry this morning and the great things he's doing for my New York Knickerbockers. Let's get into it.
Yeah, that's it. Let's just say enjoy.
So what you're saying is you're some kind of a sports masochist, really.
Yes, that is true. Just like you guys over there in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Yes,
hey.
That's right. Are you like me in any way, Ariel? I know you're much less emotional than I am about this stuff. This is your job, and you do it quite well. But at the same time, I obviously you enjoy the sport. You're knocking on wood. You're hoping everything comes through. Because, man, it seems like it's been a while since a card with this many big names looks like it's actually going to go off this Saturday, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This feels like a big deal. It feels like a big event. And, you know, one of the, I guess, drawbacks as far as, you know, the sports growth is concerned, is that there are just so many events. We're in the midst of a stretch which has seen the UFC put on 11 events in 11 weeks. And that's just a lot for fans, for journalists. It's just hard to keep up with it all. And some of the events are thinner than others. They just don't have that roster depth right now. And this one feels different. This one feels big. This is by far the biggest event of 2017, probably the biggest event since UFC 207 when Ronda Rousey came back. In my opinion, guys, this is the greatest fight in UFC history. On paper, the UFC has never been able to say that not only are the top two fighters in a particular weight class fighting each other on Saturday night, in my opinion, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world is fighting the number two pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Wow. And that's never been done. And quite frankly, I think they're dropping the ball in the promotion. They should be billing it as the greatest fight in UFC history. They're not doing that. So I will do that for them. I'm all about, you know, making the UFC money. So
yeah.
Friend of the UFC. Ariel.
Yeah. Well, and that leads me to my question. We know that you are very good friends with Dana White. You guys get along very well, have a lot of love there. You and John Jones actually have something in common when it comes to that. Can you get into a little bit? He said some things recently. I'm not answering his calls. I've got no love for him. Can you get in a little deeper into where he's at right now with how he feels towards Dana White and what that means for this fight?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, good or bad, I applaud John for just sort of being himself now and getting rid of the filter and telling us how he feels. So this relationship, the current state of the relationship, really dates back 5 years when John Jones refused to fight Chael Sonnen on 10 days' notice after Dan Henderson got injured prior to UFC 151 in September of 2012. And that was the first time the UFC ever had to cancel an event, and they lost a lot of money doing that. And ever since then, it has not been the same. And, of course, John Jones has been through a lot since then. He's had his own trials and tribulations. And there were times where, you know, give Dana and Lorenzo Fertitta, the former owner of the UFC, credit. You know, they flew out to Albuquerque, met with him. But John Jones currently just doesn't feel as though Dana White has his best interest in mind. He feels like, you know, he's your friend if he's making you money, but if he's not, he's not going to be there for you. And Dana has said a couple of times leading up to this fight that he has not talked to John Jones since UFC 200, since last summer when John famously tested positive in a pre-fight drug test and was forced to come out of the card. And, you know, I think that that's interesting because at the end of the day, Dana White's job is what? Is to be a promoter. He's essentially a carnival barker, right? He is going to go up there with a megaphone and tell the world why this fight is so great. So I don't understand why he's coming out and trying to create this rift with John Jones and tell everyone I haven't talked to him. And, you know, initially he's not going to headline this card and all that stuff. Forget about all that. Now it's time to make money. And I think John's a sensitive guy, and I think he's taken, you know, the criticism to heart, and he's essentially saying, you know, I don't want to deal with him. I'm going to deal with Ari Emanuel. Remember also, Ari Emanuel is the head of WME,
and
WME now owns the UFC, and John Jones is represented by WME. So I think he's trying to keep it in-house, so to speak.
The UFC and what they've done, and from start when they first came around to where they are now, it's astronomical, their growth and their value. So 10 years ago, would this be Dana White's approach to John Jones if this were happening then, or would it be a completely different scenario?
Well, you know, Dana has evolved a little bit over the years. I think this is something that doesn't get talked about enough. Dana White has won the war. He has won the race. He is $400 million richer on top of all the money he had before and on top of the five-year deal that he signed after the company was sold. It's just different. Look at his demeanor yesterday at the press conference. And look at his demeanor 5 years ago before a big fight. It's just different. It's hard to have that same fire. It's hard to care. He said it himself, you know, 5 years ago, I'm battling guys who are criticizing me. Ally Quinta, guys like that, John Jones. Now he just doesn't care as much. So, and I think it's, I mean, I literally spend my days like almost studying this man, right? Because I have to follow him all over the country and cover his company. And this is not me, quote unquote, hating or anything like that. This is what I observe. When he goes up there, he's not telling you, he's saying, okay, he's saying it's the greatest card, but he's not saying we've got three title fights. We've got Cyborg. We've got the debut of Tanya Evinger. We've got Hanna Brown versus Aljamain Sterling. We've got Jimmy Manuel versus Volkan Ozdemir. We have Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone. Those two names weren't even mentioned at the press conference yesterday. It's just kind of like, okay, here we go. Let's answer some questions and go home. And I think part of that is because he has made a lot of money. It's very rare to see someone cash out, make tons of money, and then stick around. Usually they move on to something else, and this is a very unique situation. Lorenzo moved on. They wanted Dana to stay. So I think Dana doesn't really care, honestly. He doesn't care if John Jones doesn't talk to him. He's already made his money. He's won the war. The race is over. I think he's just like, okay, let's have a good event. On to the next one. If this one does well, great. If it doesn't, cool. When's the next one?
MMAfighting.com's Ariel Helwani with us. I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly where I was going to go with you, Ariel. You and I both covered Dana a long, long time and have had a couple of rings around the rosy with the guy, and it just seems that he's changed. You don't have the UFC name on the backdrop for the McGregor-Mayweather fight. Yeah, I remember the Fedor negotiations, and he wouldn't even think about having M1 co-promote, and now you look at what's going on, and obviously it's a different situation with McGregor-Mayweather, and I keep coming back to the same thing. As you said, he cashed out. They wanted to retain him in the sale. Has Dana kind of checked out?
I mean, look, I'm observing a promoter, right?
Yeah.
I'm observing someone who has to set the tone. And if you know, my livelihood is on the line. You know, there was a time when they were in massive debt, right? And they were sort of crawling to make it back into the black. And you know, the Petitas had invested so much. I'm coming out there and I'm saying, okay, this year may have been a bit down, but we are coming at you with the best fight in UFC history.
Yep.
This is number one versus number two. This is the deepest. We've only done three title fights on one card a handful of times in the history of this company. This is so rare. Not only are you getting John Jones versus DC, best fight in UFC history, Tyron Woodley, who's starting to become one of the greatest welterweights of all time, against Damian Maia, who wins fights without even landing a punch. I mean, I could go on and on. I could play the gig. And I just don't see that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, where's the enthusiasm? Where's the excitement? You know, we did a reaction video to the press conference yesterday and people were like, why are you being so negative? I'm like, I'm just observing what is going on around me. I don't see a lot of fans in attendance where it was in LA. I don't feel any excitement. This card is fantastic. I am foaming at the mouth for this card. Me personally, I don't need someone to tell me how great it is because I live and breathe this. But I do think these fans have been programmed to listen to a promoter. This is part of combat sports. Tell you why it's so great. Tell you why you need to buy the fight. Tell you why it's so special. And that's all part of the carnival, right? It's part of the circus. I'm not sensing that right now. There was a boxer. I believe it was Hager? Was it Hearns? It was like 30 years ago. Said, you know, it's easy to wake up and pound the pavement when you're sleeping on the floor, but when you're waking up in satin sheets, it's a little different. You see that with fighters. You know, they make some money and they don't have that drive.
Well, and
it's the same thing here.
I couldn't agree with you more, Ariel, and not to belabor the point, but this goes back to the old conversation that people, it's an argument people hate, but I think it was always necessary, is how much of the UFC's success was, and in the future will be, Dana White, and how much were the actual fights?
Well, I mean, look, I hope I am not being misunderstood here. He was a gigantic part of the UFC's success. If it wasn't for him, I'm not sure that this company is selling for $4 billion. I'm not sure that we're sitting here talking about something called mixed martial arts in the UFC. I mean, I hope people don't think that I'm trying to disparage him or disrespect him or insult him.
Not at all. I agree with you 100%, Ariel.
He has been incredibly good to me in my career, regardless of what's happened over the past year. I'm just observing someone who has, you know, gone from rags to riches, incredible story, an American success story, who now has made a lot of money, who said time and again, if the Fertittas sell the company, I don't want to stick around. And yet, for whatever reason, he stuck around. And I just don't feel that fire. I feel like fans are relying on that when they are tuning into these press conferences and the build-up to the fight. Now, DC Jones kind of sells itself, but the other fights don't. And sometimes you need that guy. Doesn't do as much media, doesn't talk to us and things of that nature. So these are just things that I observe. At the end of the day, will, you know, his lack of enthusiasm or whatever you want to call it affect the pay-per-view buy rate for this one? I doubt it. This one, again, sells itself. But I just think it's fascinating to observe as someone who's been covering him now for 10 years.
Ariel Helwani with us. Last thing for you, Ariel.
You had me on all this time to talk about Dana White. You should be talking about the great. What's wrong with you guys?
I'm moving to John Jones.
A lot of things, right. Really, to be honest.
I'm moving to John, but it is also kind of a UFC question here. With all the documentation on his struggles. And I, by the way, again, you and I are in lockstep. I think a lot of people have forgotten that the greatest pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and in my opinion, the greatest fighter of all time, is fighting this Saturday against Daniel Cormier. When you look at what led to this, Ariel, I know if I knew about it, you sure as hell knew about it. There were whispers about John a long time ago. There were whispers amongst managers, other fighters, that this guy was on a one-way ticket to a bad world. And you saw it develop, and then you saw it just kind of explode and then explode again. Now, John Jones bears by far the bulk, if not almost all, the responsibility. My question is, do you think those whispers were ignored largely by whether it's those around him or those in the organization, or do you think he was going to screw up regardless?
Yeah, I don't know if it's fair. You know, people have blamed his enablers and things like that. I mean, he has a very good group of people around him, believe it or not. I mean, these are high-quality, high-character individuals, and in particular, his coaches. I mean, who says anything bad about the likes of Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn and Brandon Gibson? I mean, these are just tremendous individuals. Israel Martinez, his wrestling coach. I just think John Jones is a guy who got into MMA at a very young age. Him and his girlfriend had a kid. He was essentially working as a janitor and was a freak athlete and decided it was quicker to make money in prize fighting. So he went that route and, of course, found tremendous success. And once he became champion, the youngest in UFC history, just a lot came his way. And it was almost like he foreshadowed it. The UFC actually put out, in my opinion, the greatest promo in the history of the company. And I do urge everyone to go check it out. Like a couple of weeks ago about this fight, it's like 4 minutes long. And they chronicle him literally talking about before winning the belt, like, I need to make sure that I don't let the outside influences affect me and things like that, the distractions. And unfortunately, he let it happen. And I don't know if John Jones is a cured man. I don't know if he's, you know, a changed man or anything like that. You know, only time will tell, really. I mean, there are some signs that he's still kind of the old John, if I'm being honest. But, A, it's great to see him back. I do think he's the best fighter of all time. I do think he's the number one pound-for-pound fighter of all time. And the most interesting thing about that promo was what DC said, Daniel Cormier, who I have the utmost respect for, and he tied the whole story together. He said the only way John Jones becomes the man that he's been trying to tell us that he is for all these years is if I beat him on July 29th. That's the only way he will be humbled and come back down to earth. And I just thought that that was brilliant. That just blew my mind how DC put it all together. This is the best rivalry, at least in the last decade in MMA. This is our Ali Frazier. And, I mean, could you imagine if DC wins and then they do the trilogy? It's just phenomenal. When these two guys are together, it's magic. And I'm just praying to the MMA God that we get to see it. So, you know, on Saturday, nothing happened. So, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get into the blame game or anything like that. But, yes, I do agree with you. John Jones deserves, you know, most of the blame for what's happened to himself. He's done it. It's self-inflicted. And I think he's done a great job of owning up to that over the years. But I still think that only time will tell if he's truly a changed man. And maybe DC is right. He beats him on Saturday, and that's really, you know, the cure for all his issues.
One of the best fighter interviews in the entire sport, Daniel Cormier. Ariel got a chance to sit down with him, and that's at MMAfighting.com. You can also follow Ariel at Ariel Helwani. And next time we talk, buddy, after I put in the two-month request for you to finally get you on, we'll have to tell you, we'll talk about your boy James Dolan and how he needs to leave Scott Perry alone.
Okay. I mean, we ended on such a nice note, and now you have to ruin it. I'm not coming back for at least 6 months.
Have fun this weekend, and then, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk, hopefully you can shorten that six-month ban to a one-month ban so we can get you on before McGregor and Mayweather.
I love talking to you guys. Thank you so much for the support. Anytime.
All right,
thanks,
pal.
Ariel.
Take care. That's Ariel Helwani. Before we take a break, so Kevin Nagel is going to join us here in about 10 minutes. And we're going to talk about how big of a day this is for Sacramento, the groundmaking ceremony. Yes, I said groundmaking, not groundbreaking. They're actually making the ground.
There's a difference.
That the stadium is going to go on. Before we get to John on the phones at 339-1140, as promised, well, 2 minutes late here, let's do a Guns N' Roses ticket giveaway right now. Same as yesterday and the day before. Matt's going to play a little clip for you. Maybe even, not even a second. It's a recognizable song. You know the name of the song, 339-1140, call in, you win the tickets. Matt, roll tape. That's it. That actually was too long, Matt. That was actually too long. That gave the whole thing away.
You're such a micromanager, control freak.
Now, let me ask you, Katie.
In our head.
Katie, did you know the song?
Nope.
Did it sound familiar to you at all?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. Matt, one more time real quick. Okay, there you go. I will say this. That's the easiest one we've done all. It's the easiest one we've done all week. It's not even close. 339-1140, 1-800. The line's already going crazy. 1-800-920-1140. Hello, John. Welcome in. Thank you for holding.
Good morning, everyone. How are you guys?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. I want to preface this, and I told the screen caller this. Number one, I'm not a soccer fan, but sure. I listen to you guys every morning, and I heard what you guys were saying yesterday in regards to – what was going to be happening today and whatnot. I was out to dinner last night, and by the time I got home, I told my, Amazon Echo, I always have the radio on, so I just told her to tune into, CBS, so Pharrell was on. And I listened to Pharrell all the time, and he had a guest on. I got home when he was in the middle of his interview, so I do not know who this guest was, but he was talking about MLS, and they were talking about cities, Miami, San Diego, Phoenix. But I had to call into him because I had heard what you guys were saying this morning. So when I called in, I just, kind of explained, and I didn't even mention the Kings. It was nothing like that. All I told them was, I said, look, I mentioned Kevin Nagel, and I said, this guy is a smart man. I said, he's pumping a lot of money into this. I said, I think he's pretty confident that Sacramento might be getting a team. I said, they're going to start leveling off the rail yards. I said, it's pretty close to where the Kings built their arena in downtown. And Pharrell said, I love Sacramento, man. And he goes, I think Northern California, that area would be great for soccer. He goes, I don't watch a lot of soccer. He said, but I'm glad you called in and mentioned this. So then he went into this whole thing after I got off the air about the Kings. He goes, and I got to tell you, that Vlade Divac, he goes, he's doing a good job with the Kings, man. He goes, they had a great draft. He goes, that city would support any pro sports. He said, I just think it's great for the area.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing,
Scotty
John.
Scotty Farrell is familiar with this area, too. He's he did a stint over at KNBR when I was a little kid. I used to listen to him. And he's right. I mean, the stadium is going to be 19,000 large, and it's going to do fine. It's going to do just fine. And even if you're not a soccer fan, what's great about this, how about outdoor concerts? How about all the other stuff that's going to be going on down there? As we now have an arena, and we will have an outdoor stadium. Well, little summertime
speaking
action.
Speaking of concerts.
Hey, speaking of concerts, we got a Guns N' Roses giveaway here. Ryan, welcome in. Ryan, we played you a clip. Matt, play the clip one more time of the Guns N' Roses song, please. Ryan, what's the name of that song?
That sweet, sweet whistling is from Patience, Dave.
That's absolutely correct, Ryan.
Congratulations, Ryan.
Congratulations.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for being a Guns N' Roses fan. November 18th, Golden One Center. More information at khdk.com. Katie and I, pending the King's schedule for Katie, will see you out there. Hold the line. Matt will take care of you. You know the song now? You're listening to the whistling and all that? Is this, this ring a bell for you?
Dave, coming up next after this break, we're going to have Kevin Nagel on the phone to talk about the groundmaking ceremony happening just, 30 minutes from now?
I bet you he's heard this song.
Back in a couple minutes.
Sports 1140 KHDK.